You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, Happy New Year, everybody. I couldn't tell you what day of the week it is. It seems like once we get to this point in the year, I lose track of the days. I think it's Thursday. It feels like a Monday. But we got plenty to talk about. We haven't had a podcast since we left Memphis last week. Razorback football, another transfer portal entry by Dasmond James. That doesn't come as a lot of surprise. We'll talk Razorback basketball today, give you our thoughts on the playoff, also the Sugar Bowl coming up this afternoon between Georgia and Notre Dame after that tragedy that happened in New Orleans a couple of nights ago. Certainly our thoughts are with everyone affected by that. Let's start with football. Dasmond James has the big game in the Liberty Bowl, three catches, 137 yards, Ethan. And what did I say when we were walking out of the stadium in Memphis? I said, it wouldn't surprise me if he was in the transfer portal tomorrow. It's just the way that the sport is right now. You have a good performance or you have a good season, and it seems like more often than not, you're going to get into the transfer portal to see what your market value is. It doesn't mean that Dasmond James won't come back to Arkansas. I don't know that he will. But, you know, he's in the portal now. He's seeing what's out there on the open market for him. And it's unfortunate. It's like maybe an indictment on the state of college football right now that there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of loyalty to your school colors. The loyalty is to the color green.
Yeah, and I think people got to realize this too, that with a guy like Dasmond James, like, had we said he was entering the transfer portal in the weeks leading up to the Liberty Bowl, would anybody have batted a single eye?
Nope.
It might have been in his plans all along, and he was just going to play in the bowl game because, you know, is an opportunity, and then he just randomly happens to have – not randomly. I mean, he put on a great performance, and he earned it. So it might have just been coincidental that, you know, he had a great game and got in the portal. But then again, most signs point to, you know, you had a great game, and then you're going to see – what you can get, but who knows what his plans were all along.
But didn't it feel like to you the messaging, I guess would be the word, from Sam Pittman and maybe to a lesser extent from Dasmond James after the game last week, it felt like the messaging was about, okay, here's a guy that can potentially do this for Arkansas moving forward.
Yeah, well, Sam Pittman might not have known. I mean, coaches don't know what guys' plans are. I mean, there's a lot of times I think it's a total surprise, but then oftentimes it's not. And with Dasmond, it was funny because his whole media availability after the game, you could tell he was a guy that he'd never, like, been called to go talk in front of everybody like that, and then he's in a packed room with reporters after a great game in the Liberty Bowl. It was just, you know, it was kind of new to him even talking with media, but he did say, you know, he thinks that there's more in store for him in his career. But yeah, entering the portal isn't the same as transferring away, so maybe he is here, but maybe he gets in the portal and he does land at a big name, or maybe he gets in the portal and he lands at a smaller school that he can just tear it up at. Who knows? It's just funny how this works in bowl season that, you know, this time last week, had we said people will be getting really upset over Dasmond James entering the transfer portal, I think we all would have laughed a little bit just because, you know, we hadn't seen him yet. But you did see in the Liberty Bowl that he has some intangibles that make him, you know, at the very least, he's a guy that you give a shot in the spring after that. I mean, it's, you can't have a performance like that and then just pretend like it didn't happen or like he's not, doesn't have the potential to be a big piece of the offense in the future. But yeah, he's in the portal now. We'll see what happens.
I never put one and one together when I said these two different things in the run-up to the bowl game. I said there's going to be a player who has a game that it sets insanely high expectations for him moving forward. That was Dasmond James, I think, from last Friday. And then I also said there's probably going to be a player who performs well who gets into the transfer portal because they perform well. I just don't know that I ever really thought that it would be the same player. You know, maybe shame on me for not thinking that. But, you know, we'll see what happens with him. We've seen a couple of players who have gotten in the portal. Braylon Green looks so much like Broderick Green. Or Braylon Russell looks so much like Broderick Green to me that I keep calling him Braylon Green. There's the Braylon Talon factor there too, Talon Green. But I've struggled with this all year. I've called him Braylon Russell by the last name Green just because of how similar I feel like he is to Broderick Green, another Central Arkansas running back from a long time ago, played in the Petrino offense. Braylon Russell got in the portal twice, and he's back at Arkansas. Selman Bridges got into the portal, and he's back with the Razorbacks too. We'll see. It wouldn't surprise me if there were some players who, among the 25 that are out there right now, and not all of them are still available. You know, guys like Haz and some others have committed elsewhere. But maybe there might be another player or two, like a Dazmon James or somebody else who's uncommitted who might end up back in Arkansas. We'll see. Some other transfer news since our last podcast. Brooks Juracek, walk-on linebacker. He's transferring to Appalachian State. He didn't play much this year. Obviously, there's interest there because he's a local kid, played at Fayetteville High School, and, of course, his dad is Hunter. But he's going to go to Appalachian State. Again, that one didn't surprise me a whole lot because his brother, Ryan, who was here as a GA, was hired recently by Dow Loggins to coach at Appalachian State. So it gives him a chance to be, in some familiar surroundings, at least in terms of coaches who are on the staff, both with Loggins, with his brother. And then the big story, well, let me touch on this too. Luke Brown announced his medical retirement. Offensive lineman had dealt with some knee injuries, and so that's going to open up a scholarship moving forward along the offensive line for Arkansas. He never played in a game, I don't think, for the Razorbacks. He struggled with these injuries for a couple of years. And so when this happens, you still get your school paid for. I guess you still kind of get to be around the team. You're just not a part of the 85-man roster anymore in terms of scholarship players. And so he's announced his medical retirement. That happened three days ago. And then the big story was Fernando Carmona and the stomping incident. This one, I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't be surprised by anything, but I was a little surprised by just how much national exposure this thing got. I mean, just by the next day, it had already been viewed like 5 million times on Twitter alone, and no telling how many other times on all the other social media platforms. This is something that I feel like Carmona, he put out an apology statement. He didn't, in the statement, I mean, it was scrutinized. He didn't directly address the Texas Tech player whose ankle he stepped on, but he did put out an apology. But this is going to be something that I feel like is going to follow him for the rest of, you know, at least next season. It's when you get that label of being a dirty player. That's not me calling him a dirty player, but there's you Google Fernando Carmona dirty, and there's headline after headline.
You
after
Google
headline.
Fernando Carmona now, and that's the top thing.
And the player, the Texas Tech player, called him dirty because that it was a dirty play.
Yeah.
When you get that label put on you, it's hard to wash that off, and that's something I feel like he's going to have to really live with next season. And I think his play is really going to be scrutinized because of it.
Yeah, not a good look at all. And it is one of those things that is going to be, whenever you put all your effort toward, you go to all these practices, you play in all these games, you go through the year of just wear and tear on your body and all that it takes to be a college football player, you don't want the thing that people know you by is a boneheaded moment in one game. And that's all it takes, though. All it takes is doing one thing like that, and that is now your reputation, and that is what people, are gonna view you as. And it's going to follow him for a little bit. You know, it's unfortunate, but it's also, you do something like that and you kind of ask for it. Sometimes you watch these videos, and I think this is why it blew up like that. Sometimes you watch the videos and you're like, it could have been something else. You watch this one and it's pretty
deliberate.
Pretty deliberate. Yeah. From every angle, it seemed pretty deliberate. So
and that's the thing. It looked deliberate. He starts out on the left side, and the play kind of pushes him back around the right, but he kind of walks around the back and he walks right toward, I don't know if he...
CJ Baskerville.
Right. Yeah. And so, like, I don't know if he was targeting that player necessarily. I don't know. But, I mean, like, he walks right toward him, and then it looks very deliberate. And,
yeah.
That's something he's going to have to – it reminds me a little bit of Ndamukong Suh in the NFL. You know, he got that he did kind of the same thing to Aaron Rodgers really early in his career. I think it was a Thanksgiving Day game between the Lions and the Packers where he steps on his ankle, and then all of a sudden, Suh, it's like and it took a long – I mean, I don't know that he ever got that label, washed off of him. Myles Garrett, think about the play where – he ripped the helmet off and hit the guy in the head with his helmet. Like those types of plays, they, like it or not, they stick with the player.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Carmona's going to have trouble letting this one down or living this one down. He said in his statement, quote, he said, "I let my emotions get away from me. I have nothing but respect for Texas Tech and the game of football. I apologize to my team and coaches. I'm not that kind of player, and I will learn from this." So he didn't have a great game against Texas Tech. It was his third lowest score of the year. He also had an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty early in that,
which
in that
those,
game. So not his finest night.
Yeah, and you look on it. One thing I like about Pro Football Focus grades, because I mean that's all with receivers and running backs and quarterbacks, you have these firm stats
yards,
to go off of.
Right.
But linemen, a lot of times you just got to look at these grades they get, and I like that Pro Football Focus it takes those penalties and stuff, and it plays into the grade. It takes penalties into account to form that grade. So I think it's helpful because, sometimes you'll have an offensive lineman who he's blocking great, but then three false starts, that set back the team, and those got to be taken into account for his performance. So it does that.
Well, until you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com, most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports, award-winning team of reporters and photographers, bring subscribers the most trusted Razorback news, analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. We'll tell you, your subscriptions, they help us do what we do here with our podcast every day, help us send our reporters off to cover all these games. Not everybody does that anymore, but we made a commitment this year that we're sending Anthony Christensen and our photographer Hank Leighton to all the basketball games. They'll be in Knoxville this weekend when the Razorbacks take on top-ranked Tennessee. Allowed us to go to Memphis and do some stuff over there last week, so we appreciate your support of our website. Again, if you want to subscribe, wholehogsports.com. I want to tell you, too, you can find our podcast on all of the podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify, just search Whole Hog Sports. You can also find it on YouTube by searching Whole Hog Sports video version there. And we post it each day to our social media channels on Facebook and on Twitter. When we come back, we'll talk Razorback basketball. They're off to a pretty good start, 11-2, going into their game against Tennessee this week. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. We record this podcast. We're not live, but we kind of react to things that are happening live while we're recording. And during the last commercial break, Matt Zenitz of 24/7 Sports and CBS reported that Darren Wilson, who's Arkansas's secondary coach, second-year secondary coach at Arkansas, he is expected to be hired as the defensive coordinator at Georgia State. Don't know that this should come as a whole lot of a surprise, not necessarily with him, Ethan, but you think back to 3 weeks ago, somewhere in there, when Pittman had one of his press conferences, he was asked about if the staff would remain intact, and it's awfully hard to keep a staff of 10 well-paid, sometimes in high demand coaches intact from one year to the next. But he was asked if they were going to remain intact, and he said, "I think some of them are going to have opportunities, and here's one."
Yep, here is one. And I think a lot of this probably has to deal with what they did last year, the secondary improvement that they had. Whenever he comes in, they went from that secondary in 2022 was very bad. And then last year they improved to near the top of the SEC in passing yards surrendered per game. So I think that did a lot for him. And then this year, you know, the secondary numbers weren't great, but I think that maybe there's recruiting people looked at. Maybe there's, you know, just some of the talent that he was able to bring in. And he's a younger guy. He's got, I think, a couple young children, a few young children. So he's one of these that could be an up-and-comer that, you know, they see. And that's an opportunity to be a defensive coordinator that is a step up, you know, in role.
Yeah, I mean, you can't blame a guy for taking that you know, that type of opportunity. So I almost said something in the last segment. I almost said the portal sign is now closed for Arkansas. Well, I would think this opens it up now, because as I understand it, and I could be wrong, tell me if I am wrong, but for any of the players who he recruited to Arkansas, any of the players who were in his position group, or any of the players that were in the signing class who were, you know, recruited by him, I believe now they're free to have a 30-day window to get into the transfer portal. Does that sound right to you?
I know there's definitely rules there that are in place that allows it. Because think about last year, Ashton Bethel-Roman signed with Arkansas, and the wide receiver from, and then blanking on name, goes to Wisconsin.
Kenny Guyton
goes to Wisconsin, and then that opens the door for him to get out of that agreement, and now he is at Texas A&M. So I know that there's stuff there. I don't know how much it applies. I know it definitely applies with, you know, your signing class. Current players on the team, I'm not sure. I'd have to look into it, but I know there are definitely rules there. I know that, yeah, the transfer portal opens for 30 days whenever a head coach leaves their program, so I'm curious if it's a similar rule for position players and their position coach.
But what we saw last year, I mean, like you just said, with Ashton Bethel-Roman, I think is...
Yeah, I don't know if that's just for the high school signing class or if it applies to your current team too.
It just seems like the rules, and I'm not saying this is wrong, but the rules are very heavily tilted toward the player's favor. So it wouldn't surprise me if maybe we see some, whether it be, and again, maybe I should have studied up on this a little bit better. Point being, it wouldn't surprise me if maybe we see some departures based on this.
Yeah.
Because we've seen it before.
Yeah, and it is good to note as far as the Arkansas is concerned, how co-defensive coordinator Marcus Woodson, he's also, you know, like their secondary guy. So they kind of had Deron Wilson and Marcus Woodson in tandem coaching the secondary. So, you know, that stability of still having Marcus Woodson here might be able to help with the current roster. But, you know, there are always some that are drawn to a specific coach, or, you know, recruits that were recruited harder by a specific coach. So I'll be curious to see, you know, how this affects Arkansas's roster.
Wilson, 2 years at Arkansas, like you said, really good in 23. The secondary
took
a little bit of a setback this year.
If you take away the Ole Miss game, I think they would have been
comparable.
But I think they would have still been a step back from 2023, but they would have gotten by, if that makes, like, they were. But that Ole Miss game just absolutely killed their stats for the year. So, I'm curious to see how he does there. I believe Georgia Southern is Sun Belt, right?
That sounds right.
He
it's hard to keep up with. Yeah, his
alma mater is Southern Miss, which is also a Sun Belt team. So, you know, maybe it's that familiarity there of, you know, keeping up with his alma mater and their conference and stuff. So I'll be curious to see how he does. He's always been super nice.
The head coach there is Del McGee, who was with Sam Pittman at Georgia. So I don't know if maybe that's a connection or not. But
I'm also always curious to see whenever it's a guy like this that goes on staff somewhere else. I mean, we're seeing it right now with at Illinois. We brought this up, how Grant Morgan's like
an assistant linebackers coach.
Yeah, some very down their position, but it's a foot in the door to get into coaching. I'm always curious to see if, like, you know, any Arkansas players who maybe graduated or played for him could find their way on a staff. That's always something that I think is pretty cool whenever, you know, a coach like getting there. I mean, this is his biggest opportunity yet, just to be a defensive coordinator. It's always interesting to see how they try and get their former players sometimes involved.
That's a good point. So we promised basketball talk. We'll deliver it here. Arkansas beat Oakland on Monday night, 92-62 at Bud Walton Arena, 11-2 now. That's their non-conference record. Now SEC play begins. They play top-ranked Tennessee on Saturday. That's going to be a noon tip-off over in Knoxville. Really tough game out of the gate for them. in the SEC. We'll talk about Tennessee here in just a second. But first, going back to Monday night, I thought Boogie Fland, it was maybe the best game that he's played all year. Certainly the best shooting performance he's had this year. I don't know that I knew he could shoot the three the way he shot in the second half of that game. Ended up shooting 5 of 8 from three. Duthiero, man, what a monster when he can get going toward the basket. And I was really interested to hear Calipari's comments afterward about driving to the – he called it driving the pass, where basically they're trying to get it to Thero as he is – they want him receiving the ball as he's already making his way to the rim. And you could really see that point of emphasis play out in the first half against Oakland. I haven't seen a player get to the rim like that maybe all year.
Yeah, but he's got to be careful with those. I mean, he got called for a travel on one of them, and there were a couple near ones that looked like he took a step early. But those, the more you can get him going downhill just head of steam, he is so hard to stop. I mean, he is athletic. He's one of the more athletic basketball players I've seen, and he's built like a football player. He's definitely, to me, kind of an X factor in a game, just as far as his ability to get in there and drive to the rim and draw fouls, etc. Boogie Fland is crazy because you mentioned him. I thought he played his worst half of basketball the season in the first half just to play his best collective game from what he did in the second half, because I think he either was held to 1 point or scoreless or something in the first half, and he was just not looking himself, and then comes out in the second half and just torches them. There were people early in the year that were like, he needs to quit shooting the three ball. His game is the mid-range, which, of course, he's good in the mid-range. But I just thought it was so silly that people take two or three games or early in the year is like, oh, he can't shoot the three. It's three games. It's a whole season. And I think he's showing now he's a three-level scorer. And I've thought this all year that he's going to be a guy that can get it done. He can drive. He has the mid-range. He can shoot the three, and he can get to the foul line. He's a guy that I think is going to continue to just be the catalyst to it all.
I had to do a double take when I saw this. He scored 23 points in the second half. That's as many points as Oakland scored in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
He outscored their entire – he kept pace with their entire team.
Yeah, which they didn't have as much success in the second half as they had the first half. But those two big guys for them, I'm blanking on their names, Mukiba and
– they're tough names to say.
Yeah, those dudes were cooking them in the first half. I mean, it was just – feed it into them, and nobody could guard them. I liked what Arkansas started doing, where they had to do Thero kind of lurking a little bit, you know, where the big man was almost just kind of like getting in position so that Thero could either swat it or contest it, or they kind of had it in reverse a couple times too. That started to kind of change how the Oakland offense looked. And oh my goodness, the guy with the goggles too, Christie.
Mm-hmm.
That dude, he – give him a sliver of daylight. And I'm not saying he's making them, but he sure is shooting them. Their offense resorted to more of that in the second half.
Well, because they got behind. But they're not a three-point shooting team. Like, they're one of the – I think Anthony was telling me this. They shoot almost as few three-point game or three-pointers per game as any team in the country. I think maybe fifth fewest three-pointers per game.
But that guy, I would be –
And so
I
for them to
takes,
shoot 17 in a game was a little bit –
yeah.
Different.
I'm about to look at. I bet that guy takes almost the most threes in the country because he was just jacking them up. I was like, oh my goodness, this guy is fearless about shooting the threes. That's what happens whenever you fall behind. And Arkansas needed to get him behind where you feel like you got to start taking some more threes. And they were not the same team in the second half. Christie, he takes the eighth most threes in the country. So they
does
have
he? Okay.
Yeah, so their team might be down there in three-point shooting, but that guy sure does take a whole lot of them. Yeah. He's taken 117 on the year. So.
Wow.
But yeah, that Oakland team, not the same.
Not the same one
saw,
to beat last year.
Yeah, I mean, that one last year had, of course, Golkey that was good, and they had another guy who I believe transferred to a major program who was more of a big man for them, and he was really good, and those two – I mean, they were exciting to watch in the tournament.
And that's the tough thing with a team of that status, mid-major, is that you can't keep your players from one year to the next. I mean, think about, who was the guy at Tennessee last year, player of the year?
Dalton Knecht.
He had a big season at Northern Colorado, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's got who knows how much money thrown at him to go to play for a major program. And you're seeing that over and over. The big man at Alabama, Grant Nelson, is another case of this. And I mean, we I don't know if we see any at Arkansas this year, but we have.
Yeah, and what I'm going to be curious to see about this trend is that, you know, this happens with these teams, but I'm curious to see if, you know, these little teams, they're having to find the smaller programs, they're having to find a way to still get talent in and get a roster that can compete. And if they can keep up with, you know, they're having to, by the end of the year, lose some of these really good guys that they find, but they sure are identifying talent and getting them in. And if they can keep up just pulling off these upsets in the tournament, it's like, all right, you take away our really good guy, but we're going to go find some other guy that you aren't recruiting.
You've been down to Murfreesboro and mine for diamonds.
I thought you were talking about Murfreesboro, Tennessee for
no,
a second.
No.
I've been to local. Well, I don't know where this is going though.
Well, I mean, like you mine for, like, you get down in the mud and you're down there looking for, and then you finally find something and you say, hey, look what I got. And then there's a buyer right there that takes it from you, and now you got to get back down in the mud. That's what's going on with these mid-major programs.
It really is. And it's always interesting to me to find the programs that keep it up. Like, because, you know, it is hard for an Oakland, you know, are they going to be back to that? They have a great coach. Are they? How long is it going to take them to get back to where they're in the NCAA tournament and have a chance to shock a team? But there are some smaller teams that you feel like are every year kind of in the mix. So,
a couple more thoughts. Carter Knox is really coming on for Arkansas, and he's making the most of the minutes that he's getting with Nellie Davis sitting out.
Yeah, his offense in the first half, I mean, he was, I think, 3 of 3 from three-point at one point, but the offense kind of spoke for himself because I think it was a career high, if I'm not mistaken.
I think it was 4 points off career high.
I think he went against Eastern Shore.
Yeah,
that's the game that, you know, that's my UAPB of.
I had a career high that night.
Yeah, same. But the defense is what it's out. That game showed that he can be a great just on ball defender, top of the key, covering the point guard. He was picking him up around half court and making life terrible for him. That's what stood out. Like, I think about things that, you know, you look at some of these games like Oakland, like, what can you take away from it? And that was one of the top, I think, two or three things was how good he played guarding the ball, picking it up around half court. It was a good win for Arkansas. I mean, it was good in the sense that at halftime things looked kind of what's happening, and then that they ended up beating a team by 30.
And they basically did it with a 7-man rotation. Jonas Adu played, but he was sick. They didn't get the full Jonas Adu experience. You wonder. I know it's going to happen at some point, but like, when are they going to get this full rotation together? When is Nellie Davis going to get healthy? You know, when is Vonimir Ivicic? I mean, he's kind of disappeared on offense the last few games. I think he had 8 points a couple of games ago, but he's also had a couple of offers in that span. I want to see this team where everybody is playing and everybody is healthy and everybody is contributing and see what that team looks like, because we haven't seen it through the non-conference.
Yeah, and I think that that's where, you know, a lot of coaches, their eye is on March. I think a lot of coaches, it's, you know, that they're making decisions right now with March in mind, as far as, like, you know, Nellie Davis, maybe he could have played, probably could have played against Oakland. I think if they think he's going to play against Tennessee, but maybe it's one of those deals where you're not willing to, you know, you should be able to beat Oakland with your whatever else rotation. I think they're making a lot of decisions right now with March in mind, and hoping to have a complete team. I mean, you can't avoid, there's going to be, if a terrible injury happens to player X in the middle of conference play, that just happens. That happens to a lot of teams. But I think they're trying to do everything they can to have the most complete team they have by the time tournament play rolls around.
Real quick, tonight, Arkansas women's basketball, Bud Walton against LSU, conference opener for the Razorbacks. They're 7-8 overall. LSU is undefeated, and Jersey Wolfenbarger is having a good season for LSU.
Yeah, a recently good season. It started off slow for her, but she's picked it up, and she's in their starting rotation now, which –
You make that starting rotation, you're doing something.
If you are in Kim Mulkey's starting five and she made a decision to replace somebody else for you, you did something right. And I think that what's happening is they're getting her to play her size there right now, which you can't coach size. She's 6'5", and she can
Speak about that, because they've changed the type of player. Arkansas's playing her on the perimeter. Mm-hmm. LSU's playing her down in the post.
Yeah, she wanted to be a hybrid, like a big who could also play the perimeter. I mean, they called her, coming out of high school, like the female Kevin Durant, because she could shoot the three, and it just never materialized at Arkansas. It just didn't. That's just how it is. And I think that Arkansas, this is the deal. She left the program prior to last season, right after they'd had, like, they have these closed door scrimmages against other teams. They had played, I believe they played TCU.
I think it was the TCU.
They played TCU this year. They played Tulsa and somebody. And she,
was it not TCU last year, too?
I don't think they played them 2 years in a row. Okay. I'm blanking on who it is, but they, it could have been. They traveled back to TCU this year, but it was shortly after that that she left the team. And from what I've gathered, it comes down to one of either wasn't in the first five, like mm-hmm. should have thought, or maybe the role was different for her than she wanted, where maybe they were, because you look at their roster last year, and I was thinking from watching a few practices, they really need her to play down low this year, and that's what they're asking, is to play down low because they needed that size. So I think it could have been either of the two. Maybe there's something else that I'm missing, but either way, I always thought that it was kind of like a, how I interpret it, like a non-negotiable, like she wanted to be a hybrid, do that because, you know, you make it to the WNBA and you got to be able to shoot some too. But seems like she got to LSU and they have her down low, like pretty much exclusively. She plays off of Anissa Morrow there, who's going to be an All-American unless something crazy happens. And she gets a lot of those dump off passes whenever they draw the defense to her, and she's just, you know, laid up and in. So she's down low, and she's, I think, playing her best basketball of her career.
LSU has six players who are 6 foot or taller.
Yeah, they're and their and rebound margin.
And that's been Arkansas's. They don't have size.
Their rebound margin is plus 17. Arkansas's is minus 4. So that's a 21 rebound difference. It could be Kim Mulkey has no shame in just playing, like, I don't want to say bully ball, but, like, just, you know, we're
looking
gonna
for
shoot,
style points.
We're going to shoot until we miss,
yeah,
type of deal. Like, I mean, Angel Reese against them in recent years, just double-double. It's not like your typical double-double. It's like a 20 and 15 game or more. So, you know, but this is the thing about LSU this year. They're kind of weird to predict because they will lay – they haven't lost a game yet, but they will not look good in a lot of games. I've watched multiple of their games. They did not play well against Kent State. They did not play well against Tulane. They survived Washington. They survived Stanford. Like, they're definitely beatable this year. I just don't know if Arkansas is the type of – is the team that could beat them.
8 o'clock tonight, SEC Network at Bud Walton Arena. And this is part of a stretch of games where Mike Nabors and his team will be playing against a lot of their former players who have gone off to other SEC programs. Ethan will have coverage of that tonight at WholeHogSports.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about the playoff and our observations from the last few days. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. Committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass. For all your glass market needs with the highest quality products, you can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Playoff continues today with Georgia and Notre Dame at the Sugar Bowl in New Orleans. It's such a fluid situation there. But as we record this, the plan is to play that game at 3 o'clock this afternoon. I think I read where the Louisiana Attorney General chimed in and said that they would prefer that the game doesn't get played until tomorrow. But I think it's going to get played. You know, obviously, totally different set of circumstances. You know, what happened in New Orleans was just so awful and traumatic. But I do, it did make me think back to the 2018 College World Series when there was a delay due to rain. I mean, again, you're comparing a rain delay against a terrorist attack. But it made me feel for the fans who have gone to this game and who are not going to potentially be able to see it be played. And Ethan, you know this as well as I do, the people who go on these bowl trips, I mean, these are expensive trips. And then you go to a city like New Orleans on top of that, which is already, you know, outrageously expensive. And that's where I was going with the 18 World Series. Remember, there was a rain delay in Arkansas. They, you know, the Monday game got pushed to Tuesday. And then on Wednesday was the day of the drop foul ball when they weren't able to close the national championship. And on Thursday, they played that game at the World Series, and what had been 25,000 people and probably 22,000 from Arkansas the night before, it was a half-empty stadium for Game 3 of the national championship. I think it might look like that a little bit with the Sugar Bowl. It's so hard to get your plans changed at the last second. And I think that might have been part of the reason they moved the game up, was maybe to try to let as many of these people who would have been traveling home today otherwise and may still be tonight, get to the game. But, man, just what a weird, tragic, you can put about any word you want to in front of that situation that's going on at the Sugar Bowl right now.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a weird feel even watching it. It's one of those that, you know, you watch a game like this and your mind isn't, like, I mean, your mind is on the football game, but at the same time just on a lot of other things. I would assume it's going to be hard for a lot of people to stick around and still go to this because especially, you know, the beauty of these New Year's games is you can kind of plan it right after your Christmas and it can be the next thing you have. And, you know, you work it around your holiday schedule, but the later you get into this week, you know, it's Thursday today. A lot of people wouldn't have booked. I mean, a lot of people, I think, try and travel before the bowl game and do all the New Year's stuff there. Mm-hmm. And then the game's kind of your last thing, and then you leave. I just don't know many people who planned to get there, you know, maybe day of and then stay the rest of the week. It's just that's oftentimes, I don't think, how it works, especially with a lot of people going back to their normal work routine on Monday. It's just, I wouldn't expect it's going to be the same crowd that you would have had. I still think, you know, you're going to get a decent crowd, but it's just not even going to feel right. It's not going to be one of those games that you're really, you know, your mind isn't even on football that much as a viewer, at least.
So many of the fans who go to these games, they don't have the money to go to every postseason game. And so, you know, you're going to the Sugar Bowl, maybe with the thought that, hey, I'm not going to be able to go to the Orange Bowl next week, whenever that game is played, or maybe have people who aren't going to New Orleans because they're saying, hey, I'm going to save my money for Miami if we make it there for the semifinals, or you have people who say I'm not going to either of those two, I'm gonna pull everything I can together to go to the national championship if that happens. And so, you know, I feel for a lot of the people who are there. It's the first game I can think of that has been delayed due to a terrorist attack since 9/11. I can't think of another one that has in America.
Yeah, I'm blanking if there has been.
And, of course, you know, after 9/11, it was like a six-day pause before everybody started to pick up again. But you know, certainly it's one of those situations in New Orleans that, you know, we're not going to forget anytime soon. Talk about the games that have been played. We'll start with the games yesterday. Texas-Arizona State was the game of the playoffs so far. And it felt like Texas had pulled away and they were about to win. And then here comes Cam Scataboo and the boys. And it felt like Arizona State should have won that game. I'll tell you what it felt like watching Ewers complete that fourth down pass, because it was in the same end zone of the same stadium. It felt a little bit like Tua Tagovailoa, second and 26 to Devontae Smith in the national championship game. You know, an even more critical moment for Texas, certainly not as big of a game, but still – you know, their season doesn't get extended if they don't do that. Good effort by Texas at the end to win it after the missed field goals that they had. But anybody who wants to say that Arizona State didn't belong in the playoff, I mean, they can exit stage right, in my opinion, because that type of performance, especially with the way they were down and then the chips were stacked against them in the fourth quarter of that game, for them to come back and put themselves in that position at the end, I mean, they look like a playoff team. And for all the talk that there's been over the last couple of weeks about why have we expanded to 12 teams, this finally is a data point in the category of this is a good reason to expand. A conference champion who got their opportunity, who took a what we think is a really good team down to the wire in the Peach Bowl.
Yeah, so far I've loved the 12-team playoff. I just think the seeding needs to definitely change next year,
and I think it will.
It will, but yeah, that game yesterday. I mean, just the way that it had been going ever since, you know, about 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter, where it all swung on Arizona State's side. You know, you even factor in the missed field goals by Burt Auburn of Texas. I mean, once they got in that fourth down situation, they had to have it. I mean, at least I was watching my TV thinking, this is where it ends for Texas. I'm like, this is everything's gone not their way, and this is this situation. They're about to have an incomplete pass, and they blew it. Scores a touchdown on that play, and I feel like that just was such a backbreaker. I mean, you go from you could just taste win a victory and making the semifinals if you're Arizona State to all of a sudden it's pretty bleak as far as Texas got all the momentum on their side, and then they score right away there in the second overtime. It just totally changed the game, the feel of it. But Arizona State played a heck of a game. Scadabo is my favorite player of the bowl season so far in the playoff. I mean, he was just so fun to watch as far as I don't know. It's just rare you find a player that he was so almost like vintage, just like how he just wants to run over somebody undersized, but still just like a bowling ball out there.
I was thinking of a thick Darren McFadden as I watched him, because, I mean, yeah. He runs for over 100. I think he had 99 receiving yards, and then he throws for the touchdown in the fourth quarter that – it was a huge play in the game. First touchdown of the game for Arizona State. And then after that point, it felt like the lid came off. Man, he was one of the players that I was right there thinking about him for one of the three Heisman votes that I had. And I ended up going with Kelvin Banks, the tackle from Texas, over Scadabo. Which, you know, I mean, I still feel good about that. I think Kelvin Banks is one of the best players in the country. But I think a lot of people – because of some of the time of day that Arizona State plays and some of the networks that they play on. In fact, I think some of the Big 12 games are ESPN Plus only. This is one of the things where, you know, ESPN and TNT have got this, and I think inside the NBA is actually the reason that all of this stuff got, you know, this process got started. Some of the Big 12 games are going to TNT. This is where I'm going with this. And they're going to go off of ESPN Plus, and I think it'll help players – you know, potentially in a Cam Scadabo type situation moving forward, get some national publicity that maybe he was lacking before people saw him in the Big 12 championship game and certainly in the playoff game. But a great performance by Arizona State. I thought Boise State played Penn State well on Friday night. Boise State just too many missed opportunities, whether it be, you know, turnovers on the Penn State side of the field. There were a couple of missed field goals. You know, it's a 17-point game when it could be a 6-point game or so late in the game, and it felt like Penn State. This is kind of what they do. They let the air out of the football a little bit late, and Boise State just too many missed opportunities in that game.
Yeah, the playoffs so far, I mean, clearly Texas Arizona State's been the best game of it, but they haven't really delivered too much of just excitement. I mean, whenever, at least in my opinion, Boise-Penn State is the game that's been the second most exciting. And what was it?
I would say Texas-Clemson was number two. And
That one maybe.
That's a touchdown game in the fourth quarter between two big programs.
Yeah.
But no, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but Texas took such a big lead in that one. And I don't know. It never felt to me like Texas were going to lose that one. And that's kind of how I felt about Penn State. Boise did make it a little interesting. They just haven't been too exciting is all I'm trying to say. So hopefully we'll get some more. I mean, I think everybody thought Oregon and Ohio State would at least be exciting.
I would not want to play Ohio State right now.
Oh, who does?
You know, when they played Michigan, they were super conservative on offense. And it feels like since they lost that game to Michigan – they've just, you know, it's like, hey, screw it. We got nothing to lose. Let's open this thing up. And against Tennessee and again against Oregon, especially in the first half, I mean, that did not look like the same Ohio State offense that I think we've seen throughout a lot of the year. And, you know, I mean, if you're asking me right now, I would say Ohio State's probably going to play in the national championship against the winner of the Sugar Bowl today. That would be my pick for the national championship game as things stand. Here's what I've always said about Ohio State. It's like an SEC roster. It's the closest thing to an SEC roster outside of the SEC. it just doesn't always get utilized like an SEC roster. But these last two games, I feel like it has. And, you know, with those receivers and with – I mean, it's just they're impressive. And that was an impressive, impressive game against Oregon yesterday. I feel like maybe a little bit what's been underscored this weekend, realize all three of the teams were the ones who had byes in the first round. And you hear that from coaches sometimes. They say, hey, we'd much rather just keep playing than to not play for 3 or 4 weeks. And you know, Penn State was a favorite to beat Boise. I think all the favorites actually won the games. But you do wonder how much the layoff might have affected those three teams that lost.
Yeah.
How it might affect Georgia today.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see how that does play out. It's, you know, that's such a balance between momentum and rest of, like, which is better. I think in football, rest has got to be, I mean, at a premium. It's just it's such a physical sport on people's bodies. So it doesn't surprise me that the teams that have had a little bit more rest are having some success. But then again, if you are a team that's just, you know, like, I'm bringing them up because this is my favorite game of the bowl season was South Carolina, Illinois. But like South Carolina, you felt like at the end of their regular season, you just wanted to keep playing. You don't want any time off because of how they were playing. But that game against Illinois was awesome. So
how about Brett Bielema?
Yeah.
I mean, that's classic Brett Bielema, what he did in that game. The getting under the skin of the opposing coach.
It's so funny what he did. And I know people are so mad about it too because, he shouldn't have, you shouldn't ever, you know, go and taunt the other coach in a game like that, but like it I thought he was doing it about what they said on the broadcast about all the substitution stuff because he was totally abusing. I mean, it's a, you can get around the rule for a reason still, but the whole substitution late substitution rule, but it was actually about the kickoff.
Yep.
Which whenever I heard the two coaches explain it again, I was actually like very much on Brett Bielema's side y'all were trying to South Carolina, what they did was,
it's the same thing North Texas did to Arkansas in 2018, where they fake a fair catch and then they run for a touchdown. Now, South Carolina didn't score a touchdown, but anytime you take advantage of a player slowing down and coming to a stop in the name of trying to, you know, I hate this term, but player safety, it's so overused. But anytime you try to take advantage of a what's kind of become a commonplace player safety thing, I'm going to side with the team who's upset about
and
that.
And the thing is, I don't know if you saw that. Did you see the kickoff that they did it on?
Yes.
It was the guy who ended up they lateraled it across it was a trick. Yeah, like a trick kickoff return. He's the one who I think did that that motion to signal
the one who actually it's the one and maybe both of them.
I think it might have been both of them.
The one who I know that the one who fielded the ball and threw it through the lateral across the field, that he had the T-bar signal.
Yeah. And he did the thing where he just, you know, they catch and they do the little jumps kind of just to show like, hey, this is for catch. And it was – so Brett was upset about that because it was,
Here's – hey, can I just interject? On South Carolina and or Illinois and the slow play substitutions, the fault lays with South Carolina at least on one of those plays because – their sub doesn't get into the huddle until 9 seconds left on the play clock.
Yeah.
If you are going to sub that late in the process, you've got to – I mean, it's – you could see on the sideline, Beamer, I mean, he kind of – you know, he is so he's got so many expressions. I mean, you can read this guy like a book. And so you can see when this guy starts to run in that he looks up at the clock, and I mean, it looks like he's got an ulcer or something.
Yeah.
And he starts, you know, he's animated going after his coaches. He knew that they had messed up by sending in that player so late, and he knew he was going to have to take a timeout at that moment.
And my favorite part about it all is that, you know, this is such an unrelated to the substitution rule thing whenever we get to it about what Brett taunted them with. But so shortly after that, and after you already have Beamer just fired up, so angry, Brett takes advantage of the substitution thing again and causes them to have to call a timeout. And the little grin that came across Brett's face on the sideline was maybe the best camera work of the playoff yet, where you just got to see how thrilled he was that after just getting under Beamer's skin like that, that he cost him
a timeout that South Carolina could have used at the end of the game.
They really needed it at the end of the game, and they didn't have it. And so Brett got the final laugh for sure. And that was... I mean, that was exactly what you want in bowl season. Just random, doesn't make sense, hatred going on.
That's really the only bowl game, though, outside of the playoffs, that interested me. And you know, yeah, I mean, you're interested in Arkansas because you cover them. But I think what this whole year has kind of – this whole postseason format has kind of underscored for me is the fact that the – it feels like the NIT versus the NCAA tournament. You watch all these other bowl games, it's like, yeah, you know, this is just something that's on TV to get you by. Here's the stuff I'm really interested in.
Yeah.
And the Citrus Bowl, I think the only reason I was really interested in it was because you had a couple of Arkansas angles in that game. And the fact that there were no other football games on, and it's New Year's Eve when there's really, you know, nothing else going on.
Well, and it's similar to the NIT in the fact that – was 2019 the last time Arkansas played in it?
I think so.
Yeah. You know, Daniel Gafford opted out of
that. That's when they played Indiana, lost to Indiana, right?
Yeah, and beat Providence,
lost to Indiana.
And Daniel Gafford opted out of that, and that's why it feels so similar, because people aren't opting out of the college football playoff, they aren't opting out of the NCAA tournament. They will opt out of random bowl games and NIT games. So
yeah, and that's what it feels like to me, is it feels like NIT against NCAA tournament. And you know, we've seen what's happened with the NIT. I mean, you don't care about it unless you're in it.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's kind of what it is with non-playoff bowl games.
Thank goodness the transfer window is different. Because think about it, if basketball had the same issue where you're losing guys – like, how they would not be able to play the NIT in a lot of teams wouldn't have the roster. So,
right. That's good.
Yeah, it's put that on a football scale where you have even more chaos where guys are opting out, guys are transferring, et cetera. It's just, you have logos that are the same. You don't have teams that are the same. So,
like, we appreciate you being with us. Hope you'll visit us at WholeHogSports.com. We'll have more on this Darren Wilson story as the day goes along. But until tomorrow, have a great day, everyone. We hope to see you tomorrow on our podcast.